morning. It's a pleasure to be here. Whenever I hear that phrase, without further ado, I always wonder, what does ado mean? I don't know, but it indicates that something ado took place and no further ado. So I don't know what that means, but it's an honor to be here. Rabbi Ben knows that I have very special warm feelings for him and for this kollel, because I actually grew up with his father, high school buddies. When I hear Rabbi Reuven ben Etzion, I say, that's not Etzion, it's Etzi. That's how I know him. I haven't seen him for over 40 years, but every time I see Rabbi Brandon, I think of the kollel, it gives me very warm feelings. Three days ago, I did a beginner service at CTN for people without much background, trying to engage them in the davening and in the process. So I told them a story. Someone sent me a list of these cute, adorable things that kids say sometimes when teachers ask questions. So the teacher was telling the class that George Washington chopped down the cherry tree. The question if that actually happened, but chopped down the cherry tree, and he admitted it to his parents. He owned up to it. So the teacher says to the kids, why do you think that George's parents didn't punish him? They wanted to bring out, of course, that because he owed up to it. So why did his parents not punish him? So one kid says, maybe because he was still holding the hatchet in his hand. That's the kid comes up with something, you know. So I use that as an introduction to tell people that we taught the world that we don't approach Hashem, we don't approach God as someone with a hatchet. You know, in the pagan world, there was no relationship. God had a hatchet, and you listen to God because otherwise he could zap you. We taught the world, yes, there is a concept of course, of punishment, and we have to be aware of that, and there is a concept of fear. But at the same time, there's a relationship, and that's fundamental to what we taught the world. What I want to do this morning is, I think it was called surprising component of Yom Kippur. I want to make a case that we need, our generation especially, but that we need to a little increase perhaps the Ahava, the love aspect of our avoda, our service of Hashem during this time, beginning with Elul. There are a few different ways that we approach Hashem. Most basic is Yiras HaOnesh, fear of punishment, and we need that, of course. Right. And then there's Yiras HaRomamus, which we usually translate like a sense of awe, the greatness of Hashem and how small we are. And then there is Ahava, love. And then there's another level, which I'm going to share with you, which I believe is something that we need. And I think that there are indications that it should be central in the way we approach Hashem. We probably have all heard that Elul is associated with the Pasuk Ani L'Dodi, the Dodi Li. The pasuk where four words in the row spell out Elul, Ani L'Dodi, the Dodi Li. That pasuk is probably the most well-known romantic pasuk in all of Tanakh. Ani L'Dodi, the Dodi Li. People incorporate it in different ways into wedding ceremonies. So Elul, the very month that is chosen to prepare us for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, is associated, and this is brought down by the Vilna Gaon, it's accepted in El Masorah. Elul is associated with love, a love relationship with Hashem. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch has a very interesting piece, which I've never saw referred to by anybody, actually. He talks about the fact that in addition to Ani L'Dodi V'Dodi Li, there are actually two other psukim. He says the Bali Musar, and I haven't found the source for it, but he says Bali Musar point out that the two other psukim that also indicate Elul in the same way. One is Umol Hashem Elokecha es levavcha ve'es levav. Hashem will circumcise or remove the impediments from your heart. Es levavcha ve'es levav. Also es levavcha ve'es levav is Elul. And also in, anyone know where the other one is? Megillas Esther. Ish l'reyehu, matanos le'evyonim. Shlach manos, ish l'reyehu, matanos le'evyonim spells out also Elul. And he suggests, he says in their name, that these three psukim correspond to the three things that we recite on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, teshuvah, tefillah, u'tzedakah. So the most obvious one, teshuvah is mal Hashem l'keches levavcha, purify our heart. So that corresponds to teshuvah. Tzedakah is also obvious. Matanos levyon ish l'yehu matanos levyonim. By the way, it's a little beyond the scope of our discussion, but there are many sources that indicate that Purim and Yom Kippur have two halves of one coin. And of course, we know that matanos levyonim is central to Purim. And if you read the Haftorah for Yom Kippur, which is Yeshaya's message to us about Yom Kippur, this tremendous emphasis about lifting up the spirits of poor people. As an aside, it always strikes me as very strange that people will come to hear, let's say, Moshe Katz talk about Yom Kippur. If Yeshaya Novi was here, we'd all run to Yeshaya Novi, right? And we have the Haftorah is the message from Yeshaya Novi about Yom Kippur, and somehow very often it gets lost. It's a beautiful, uplifting Haftorah. But the message, primary message there is that you can't approach Hashem by fasting without also taking care of the needs of the poor people. The question is the last one. So what corresponds to tefillah, to prayer? So the Kitzur Shomach says, that's Anil Dodi B'Dodi Li. He says something beautiful. He says, because tefillah, prayer, is Rinas Dodin. It's a love song. Kitzur Shomach says that tefillah is Rinas Dodin. It's a song of lovers. And that said, therefore, tefillah corresponds to Anil Dodi B'Dodi Li. Right. So all these things that set the tone for Elul and for tefillah in general, it's hard to wiggle. We shouldn't have to wiggle out, but it's hard to wiggle out of the fact that somehow love has to be central to Avodas Hashem. Every tefillah, he doesn't say except for Rosh Hashanah, because those are like really serious days. Tefillah is Rinas Dodim. It's a love song. It's an expression of love between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it would seem that love has to be certainly has to be there, and perhaps central to the way we approach Hashem at this time. One thing that always came to my mind, that sort of doesn't fit into this, is that we know that central to Rosh Hashanah is the Akedah. And the Akedah, if anything, we associate with Yiras Hashem. Right? The Pasuk says, Hashem told Avram, now I know you are Yirei Elohim. Shofar is rooted in the Akedah. So it seemed difficult to make a case that Abba, love has to be central when the central theme of Rosh Hashanah, the Akedah, seems to be totally fear Yiras Hashem. So the truth is Chazal very explicitly tell us that that's not the case. There's a Gemara in Sota Daf Lamed Aleph that says, Nemar Yirei Elohim Be'iyov. Talks about Eov, the first pasuk in Eov says that he was Yirei Elohim. V'nema Yirei Elohim be Avraham. It mentions that Avraham is Yirei Elohim. And the Gemara says, just like Yirei Elohim by Avraham is Abba that's rooted in love, comes from love, likewise the Yiras Hashem that of Eov is rooted, comes from love. The Gemara says, how do you know that? How do you know that Avraham's Yiras Elohim comes from love? The verse says the pasuk in Yeshaya. Yeshaya refers to the Jewish people as Zera Avraham Ohavi, the descendants of Avraham who loved me. So it's axiomatic to the Gemara that if he's described by Yeshaya as the one who loved HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then that's a central relationship to Hashem, and it must be that when it says that he feared Hashem, it's a fear of Hashem that's somehow rooted in love. That's explicit in Chazal. The question is, what does it mean? What's the connection that the fear is rooted in love? Before I get this, I want to sidetrack a little bit just to tell you a little bit of a sort of an introduction to this, which is not obvious, but I want to mention three people, three names, and I would never, ever put the third name with the other two, but I'm doing it only here for a specific purpose. The first name is Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Second one is Yibodeh L'Chaim, for long life of Aaron Lichtenstein. He just celebrated his 80th birthday. Shlita. And third one is Moshe Katz. I would never ever put those three names together because we have nothing in common. Of course, we're both parts of B'nai Yisrael. We have virtually nothing in common. There's actually one thing we have in common. That's why I mention it. All three of those people, quote, were Talmidim of Rav Huttner. To an extent. Rav Aaron, not everyone knows that Rav Aaron was Rav Moshe Soloveitchik's father, engaged Rav Huttner as a bocher in Slabodka to learn with Rav Aaron before his bar mitzvah even. They learned the whole Bava Kama and the whole Rambam of laws of Chor V'Lamazik, laws of damages. I was told that Rabbi Baron's bar mitzvah, which was in Warsaw, Rav Huttner was running from table to table to tell people that the Dvar Torah that he just said, that Rav Aaron just said as a bar mitzvah boy, he wrote it himself. Don't think I wrote it. He wrote it because people couldn't believe that he wrote it. Right? And for his whole life, he saw himself as a Talmud, eventually became a Rebbe, a Rosh Yeshiva in Chaim Berlin. All my Rebbeim were Tamidim of Rav Aaron. And Rav Aaron Lichtenstein learned by Rav Huttner before he married the Rav's daughter. So really, we have nothing in common, because the first two were Talmidim, and I was in Rav Huttner's year. It's not the same thing to say that. But the reason I mentioned to you is because I want to tell you two things, one from each one of those. The first year that I came to Chicago, I was from the original group that started the Kollel. I have a warm feeling for Kollel. The more Kollel, the better. And the first year we were here, it was the first yahrzeit of Rav Huttner. And Rav Aaron, Salvechik Zatzal, said a hesped for Rav Aaron. And of all the things that he chose to say many things, but he told of one experience that he had. And he said that he was in Rav Huttner's office once, and the boys that graduated high school would come into Rav Huttner to discuss their plans for the next year. And those who were going to college would discuss what they were planning on taking in college. So Rav Aaron is in Rav Huttner's office. Boy walks in and says, "What are you taking?" He says, "I'm going to take psychology." Rav Huttner says, "Psychology? Any psychologists here?" He says, "Psychology, that's fluff. It's not an exact science. Take physics. That's an exact science. Psychology is fluff." That's what he said. Next guy walks in. "What are you going to take?" "Physics." Rav Huttner says, "Physics? That's so rigid. There's no room for self-expression. Consider psychology. There's room for self-expression. Grow yourself." So Ryan's like everyone else. Ryan's sitting there saying, what's going on here? So afterwards, Ryan asked Rav Huttner, what just happened over here? So Rav Huttner explained to him that the first boy who walked in was all over the place, expressing himself. He needed some rigidity and structure in his life. That's why he steered him towards physics. The second one was too rigid, had no self-expression. So he steered that boy towards psychology. Rav Aaron was figuring out that Rav Huttner was a master at what we associate with Slabodka Yeshiva. Rav Huttner used to say, he said it many different ways as he would say things. He used to say that a yeshiva is not a salami factory. Salami factory, we're going to see 500 salamis, they're all identical, hanging from the ceiling. He said yeshiva is not supposed to be a salami factory. Each individual is different. For this person, physics could be good. For that person, it could be bad. That was his approach. So Rav Aaron said over that story. Rabbi Lichtenstein, Shlita, must have been also close to maybe 30 years. He visited Chicago, and I spoke to him, and we have to mention I went to Chaim Berlin, a footnote. So he told me that he had an experience. He said he went to Eretz Yisrael before Rav Huttner moved to Eretz Yisrael, and when he came to Eretz Yisrael, he went to visit his Rebbe, Rav Huttner. So Rav Huttner asked him, "How do you like Eretz Yisrael?" So Rabbi Lichtenstein said, "It's unbelievable. There's so many yeshivas, people learning all over the place. It's unbelievable. It's so inspiring." And Rabbi Lichtenstein told me that Rav Huttner blasted him. You have to be Rav Huttner to blast Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. We're talking about out of our leagues over here, both of them. Rav Huttner says to him, "Eretz Yisrael is not just a place where there are a lot of yeshivas. What about the fact you're walking in Eretz Yisrael, the vira of Eretz Yisrael, the holy air of Eretz Yisrael, the schus of being in Eretz Yisrael? It's just a place that has a lot of yeshivas." He took him to task for not appreciating or expressing appreciation simply for the fact of being in Eretz Yisrael, the holy land of Eretz Yisrael. He told me that story then, and he told me that experience is etched in his mind. Then, just recently, I happened to see a shiur that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein gave about Avas Eretz Yisrael, and he actually refers to that experience. And before I get to that, just to contrast, Rav Huttner was known as a person who can give rebuke to people in a way that elevated them, that inspired them. That's all part of the Slabodka, Godless Adam, elevating people. Some of the stories are famous in the worlds of Chinuch because they're classics. But there's one story that is somewhat well known, but I hope that some of you have not heard it. There was evidently a boy in yeshiva who was spending half his day in his room playing violin. He was into violin. So instead of learning during Seder, he was playing violin in his room. So word got back to the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Huttner. He sent a message to the boy, "Come to my office with your violin." So he figured for sure he's going to smash the violin. Why would he tell me to bring the violin? So he's shivering in his pants. He comes to Rav Huttner's office with his violin, and Rav Huttner says to him, "Play your best piece." So the guy figures, like the last meal before the execution. play your best piece, and then boom. So he plays his best piece. Buddha sits there, and he's meditating, and he says, play it again. Play it again. Makes him play 3, 4, 5 times. He says to the boy, you know, you have such a talent. I'm elevated by listening to you play. It's such a God-given talent. He says, use it, but not during Seder. Not during learning. That's how he took this boy. Instead of smashing the violin, he elevated him and built him up. Contrast to this, so in this year, Rabbi Lichtenstein again tells the story that he had, like Eretz Yisrael, a lot of learning, and he blessed him. And he added some details. He says to him, Aaron and Moshe didn't have the schus, didn't have the merit to go to Eretz Yisrael, and you do, and you don't feel that, you don't express that. He blessed him. But what struck me the most was the way Rabbi Lichtenstein summed up that meaning. You know, I know I read occasionally articles from him. You know, it's like the opposite of George Bush. They say George Bush doesn't send you for a dictionary when he speaks. Barron sends you for a dictionary when he speaks, you know, articulate and words and hardly a word less than 8 letters. Right? That's my experience. Right? Barron says to Talmidim, I came out of a footnote's office, I felt like a beaten dog. That's what he says to us. I felt like a beaten dog. It seemed very uncharacteristic of him. Like a beaten dog. So you think about the guy with the violin, he's elevates him, he's maroiming him, and Lichtenstein comes out feeling like a beaten dog. You know, again, this is part of the non-salami. Right? So I'm virtually certain that, if I could say that the thought process here was, why that guy gets lifted up, he's playing violin the whole day, and Rabbi Lichtenstein, this big Talmid Chacham Rosh Yeshiva, he gets beaten. Right? I think the answer is because Rav Huttner knew that 99.9% of people walk into his office, if they left his office feeling like a beaten dog, would remain a beaten dog and would be broken. Occasionally, there's a person who's special enough and a high enough spiritual level that can walk out like a beaten dog, but will still use that experience to elevate himself in the future, right? And use that experience to be aware constantly of Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, to make a shir about Avos Yisrael from that experience. Most people can't do that, right? I share these stories because I think it's very important. That's the point, that no one could say there's Yiras Hashem, there's Avos Hashem, and here's the proportion. Every person is different, but what I wanted to share with you is that we all, I think, need to incorporate love Ava into our Avodas Hashem, and arguably it should be maybe increased, perhaps especially for us. So going back to the Gemara, so the question is, the Gemara says that the Yiras Hashem of Avram Avinu was rooted in Ava, in love. So what does that mean? So Maral says, in Sivas Olam, Maral says, that he says that really the highest level you have, let's say you have Yiras Onish, fear of punishment, then you have Yiras Aromamus, awe, then you have love, then you have, he says, fear of breaking the love. He says the highest level of connection to Hashem is when you have such a feeling of love for Hashem that your biggest fear becomes breaking that love. So it's fear, but it's rooted in love. You know, I think to myself sometimes that we have difficulty relating to the onish part because, you know, we never experienced it. It's, you know, and it's hard for us to, we don't really, because of our lack of spiritual stature, we don't appreciate what it means in Aveira to violate Hashem's will. Right? But we all do intuitively know what it means when somebody betrays love. You know, we've all seen, like probably hundreds of times, where people different ways did things that were wrong. Right, and you see them on TV, you're holding a newspaper over their face. And really, if a person has any substance, the biggest pain they have is the fact that they betrayed the people that love them. We all know what it means, the pain of feeling that you betrayed someone that you love and someone that loves you. And Maral says the highest form is a fear of breaking the love relationship, of betraying the love. So when the Chazal say that Avraham Avinu's Yiro came from Ava, it's the fear of betraying that love. And I think that you find it explicitly. You know, you might say that Elul, okay, Rosh Hashanah, but Yom Kippur, like Yom Kippur, you know, don't bring the love into Yom Kippur. I think you find it explicitly in a very striking way on Yom Kippur. You know, different shuls have different degrees of singing. But I think there's one song that I think is universal. Every shul sings, Onu Amecha. Everyone sings that. And something, you know, we sing things sometimes, and when we just sing it because it's a nice tune, it's uplifting, it's inspiring. But Onu Amecha, if we think about it, is literally, it's a love song. That's what it is. We are to you, you are to us. We are to you, we are to us. And then you have the words, you have the words in that song, Anu ra yasecha v'yata dodenu. We are your dear ones, and you are our beloved. It's a love song. There's no other way to describe it. It's expressing love. It's a love song between us and Kadosh Baruch Hu. Does anyone know, I know there's no caffeine today, so if anyone is still with me, there can be Torah without caffeine, I hope. What, right after we sing this love song, that we anu ra yasecha v'yata dodenu, we go straight into what? Bidui. We go straight into Bidui. You couldn't think of two things that are more disconnected than your beloved, our beloved, love song, and Vidui. Vidui is a crushing expression of our failings, recognizing our failings and self-examination. But we go straight from the love song to the Vidui. Because I think that one of the components here is that we're expressing this very idea that it's a love relationship. And we're going to the Vidui now because we know we are afraid, and we know that we probably, to different degrees, betrayed that love relationship. So obviously, the Vidui incorporates obviously Yiras HaOnish, obviously an important part of it. But it seems to me that there's got to be a component of love here, and I think that we can use that very powerfully because I think we can relate very well to this idea of a love relationship that we betrayed the love. And the good news is that we know, we're promised by Chazal and Pesukim and throughout Tanakh, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises us that even when we betray the love, we can restore the love relationship back. In human relationships, when you betray the love, you never know in one's heart of hearts can you ever really reestablish that love. But we're promised that we can do that with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I think our generation, every person is different, but I think we have to notch up a little bit the love relation. That can really, I think, elevate our tefillah, our process. What time should we? I cut out all the jokes because I know we want to make up for time. Yeah. I want to just tell you a few things and try some practical ideas as well. Rav Hunter says in a different context that when we talk about revoking the relationship they have with the Ovos, the forefathers, so he gives an example. He talks about a king, but we can think, picture you have somebody, whatever it is in your life that you'd like to better yourself and advance yourself. Let's say it's your career or whatever it is, right? And there's a person that can open up doors for you. If you get to that person can open up doors. So if someone gets you an appointment with this person, and you spill out your heart, like, you could help me, you could open up doors for me in so many different ways, you schmooze with the person, and you tell me your background, where you come from, your parents, your grandparents, and then the person says to you, I would not be inclined to grant your request. I'm busy. I wouldn't do it. From our conversation, I see that you are so-and-so's grandson or granddaughter. He was my best friend growing up. I loved your grandfather deeply. And because of your grandfather, out of love I have for him, I'm going to consider your request. So when we say, okay, Abraham, I tell people that when we say Abraham's name, it's spiritual name dropping. By the way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I want to introduce myself. You might not be inclined to even listen to Moshe Katz, but Moshe Katz is the grandson of Abraham Avinu. Gets us, and that gets Hashem to look at it differently. But I'd like to expand that with one idea, which I think is very, could be very uplifting as well. So picture yourself in the office with this person who just said, I wouldn't do this ridiculous request, you don't deserve it, and why would I do it? But I see that you're so-and-so grandson, and I loved your grandson, your grandfather. What's the best thing that could possibly happen after that? You're sitting there, and the guy looks at you, and he starts smiling. Best thing would be that he says, I look at you, I see your grandfather. I see you have the same smile, the same mannerisms. I look at you, I see your grandfather. Now I'm going to do it. I'm not just going to sit it, I'm going to do it. Because that evokes such warm feelings within him. Right? So when we evoke Avraham Avinu's name, I'm a grandson, granddaughter of Avraham Avinu. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at us and says, he's not just saying it. I see Avraham Avinu. I see the love relationship. It's true about Chesed, of course, also, which is a main midah of a trait of Avraham Avinu. If we can approach Hashem, right, and he gets a sense that like Avraham Avinu, we're trying to establish a love relationship with him, our tefillahs have much, much more power because it has that added dimension of I have warm feelings for Avraham Avinu, and I see Avraham Avinu in you. So I not just like a yeshiva is not a salami factory, a shul is not a salami factory, and even within ourselves, it's not all one salami. You know, we can incorporate the different aspects of Avodas Hashem into our personality, etc. But I would humbly submit that if we can incorporate some love into it, it'll be uplifting and it can really elevate our relationship. I want to give two suggestions, practical suggestions, about related to Hashem through love. And one is Talmud Torah, learning Torah. Rabbi Solomon from Lakewood Yeshiva has a beautiful piece where he describes the Torah. We constantly refer to Ava Rabba, love in the fact that we got the Torah. He refers to the Torah as Hashem's love letter to Klal Yisrael. It's a love letter. I want to have a relationship with you. Here are the terms for the relationship. He says that's why we find that Bittul Torah, the idea of wasting time when we can or should use it for, it's appropriate learning for learning Torah, and we waste the time, is such a terrible avera. He says it's not the avera. It's not like eating pork is an avera, and this is a worse avera. That's not what it is. He says he said a beautiful thing. He says there's no bigger pain than when you send somebody a love letter, and they don't read it. I always tell people, I always say to myself, I wish I could do this in front of a shul. I give a service on Rosh Hashanah, I introduce the Shema, I introduce it. So I always tell people, picture a Marine in Afghanistan. He's away from his family. One day they give him the chance to sit down and write a letter to his wife. What's that letter going to be about? His investments? No. The beers? Maybe more likely, but also probably not. If there's any substance to that relationship, it's going to be a love letter. He writes a love letter to his wife from Afghanistan. 2 weeks later, they give him some time to call home. He says to his wife, you got my letter? She said, you know, it's been so hectic lately. It's on the top of my to-do list. I just didn't get a chance to read it yet. Painfully, onwards, to send a love letter to somebody and they don't read it. When we don't use the time that we could for learning Torah, it's like not reading the love letter. I once spoke in Aryeh Crown in 8th grade. It was before Shavuos, so I wanted to bring out this idea to the kids. So I about a love letter. So I said, "You guys go to camp?" They said, "Yes." I said, "You get a letter from your mother?" They'll say, "No." I said, "Could it be that the whole class is dysfunctional families? No one gets a letter from the." So when the Rebbein was younger than me, says they get texts from the mother. I love you. That's a you get from the mother. It's not the same thing. We don't even know what a love letter is these days. But those of us who have the schus to still remember what a love letter is, looking at the Torah like a love letter is something that could really motivate us to use that time to read the letter. Finally, I want to conclude with something about brachos that we say all the time. I always think about, you can have two types of husbands and wives. You can have a husband who's very successful financially, and he's all established, and he really has nothing to do, no need to work anymore, and they spend time together, they go on cruises, they go all over the world, and Eretz Yisrael, and visit their children, and it's all wonderful, it's all fine, right? They spend a lot of time together. Then you have a person who works very, very hard, and barely has time to get away for a vacation. Spends not much time with his wife, right? So the first couple has a rich relationship, which the second one would seem doesn't have. But there's something that the second husband can give to his wife that the first one can't. Even though the first one has so much time to spend with his wife, the second one can call his wife in the middle of the day and say, "I can't talk, it's so hectic, I'm going crazy, I love you." That's something that the first husband doesn't have that opportunity, because he always has time for her. Second one, when you say, like, you hop around, you find time in the middle of the day to connect, right? That's something precious that the second husband can give to his wife, right? And, we have davening, we have tefillahs, which are full tefillahs for a long time. We have people who have the privilege to spend full time learning Torah, right? A bracha gives us the ability in the middle of the day to say to Hashem, I'm busy, I just want to say thank you. I just want to connect to you, right? And it's a connection that's a very meaningful connection, right? The davening, of course, is important, and davening is a deep connection. In a certain way, if we think about brachas and we say them in a certain way, it could be a connection, a deeper connection, because we don't have time. It's hectic. But in the middle of the day, I'm going to set aside time to say a bracha, to learn a mishnah, to grab something, Right? There's something special about that. So the some thoughts, some food for thought. Hopefully everyone can incorporate maybe something into this, into your own personal avodas Hashem. And the main thing is, there was a great person here in Chicago, who I'm sure many of you know him, Victor Siegel, the caterer. He once told me one thing which I always, I never forget. He said, of all the things that you have to have kavana for when you daven, the most important thing is tiskabel tzalosan. Because that sums it up. That's we say to Hashem, accept our prayers. So tiskabel tzalosan, all of our prayers should be accepted. We should all be zochet to a shana tova and a rich and deep relationship with HaKadosh Baruch.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Sorry.